In the dark of night, one light still yet burns. Frightened fingers tremble as brittle pages turn. Fireside Mystery Theater presents The Midnight Reading, a special series of dramatic recitations of dark masterpieces in miniature by the masters of the macabre. Good evening, I'm Ali Silva. I have coveted everything and taken pleasure in nothing. Such dour words for an epitaph, wouldn't you say? Those are the very words that were prescribed by Guy de Maupassant, the great man of letters, to be chiseled into his own tombstone. It can be found here in section 26 of the Montparnasse Cemetery in Paris. If we make our way around this historic site, we can see the final resting places of other French luminaries, such as Charles Baudelaire, Jean-Paul Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir, and Serge Gainsbourg. Although widely loved and admired in his own lifetime, and one of the few authors of his time to be made wealthy exclusively from his own writings, his was a life that ultimately descended into madness and despair, and finally this elegant but lonesome grave. He died in Paris at a private asylum called Esprit Blanche. He was only 42. Well, all this talk of gravestones and churchyards is an eerily prescient segue for tonight's terse tale of the unexpected. Here to read Was It a Dream by Guy de Maupassant is our own James Reeser.
I had loved her madly. Yesterday, I returned to Paris, and when I saw my room again, our room, our bed, our furniture, everything that remains of the life of a human being after death, I was seized by such a violent attack of fresh grief that I felt like opening the window and throwing myself out into the street. I could not remain between these walls which had sheltered her, which retained a thousand atoms of her skin and of her breath. I took up my hat to make my escape, and just as I reached the door, I passed the large mirror in the hall, which she had put there so that she might look at herself every day from head to foot as she went out, from her little boots to her bonnet. I stopped short in front of that looking glass in which she had so often been reflected. So often. So often that it must have retained her reflection. I was standing there, trembling, with my eyes fixed on the glass, on that flat, profound, empty glass, which had contained her entirely and had possessed her as much as I. I felt as if I loved that glass. I touched it. It was cold. Sorrowful mirror. Burning mirror, horrible mirror to make men suffer such torments. Happy is the man whose heart forgets everything that it has contained. I went out without knowing it toward the cemetery. I found her simple grave, a white marble cross with these few words. She loved, was loved, and died. And she is there below. I sobbed with my forehead on the ground, and I stopped there for a long time. Then I saw it was getting dark, and a strange mad wish, the wish of a despairing lover, seized me. I wished to pass the night in weeping on her grave. But I should be seen and driven out. How was I to manage? I was cunning, and got up and began to roam the city of the dead. I walked and walked. How small the city is in comparison with the city in which we live. And yet, how much more numerous the dead are than the living. We need high houses, wide streets, and much room. And for all these generations of the dead, there is scarcely anything. The earth takes them back. Adieu! At the end of the cemetery, I was in its oldest part, where the crosses themselves are decayed. It is full of untended roses, of strong and dark cypress trees, a sad and beautiful garden. I was perfectly alone. So I crouched under a green tree and hid myself amid the thick and somber branches. When it was quite dark, I left my refuge and began to walk softly. I wandered about for a long time but could not find her tomb again. I went on with extended arms, knocking against the tombs with my hands, my feet, my knees, my chest, even with my head, without being able to find her. I groped about like a blind man. I felt the stones, the crosses, the iron railings, and the wreaths of faded flowers. I read the names with my fingers. I could not find her again. There was no moon. What a night! I was horribly frightened in those narrow paths between two rows of graves. I sat down on one of them, for I could not walk any longer. My knees were so weak. I could hear my heart beat. And I heard something else as well. What? A confused, nameless noise. Was the noise in my head, in the impenetrable night, or beneath the mysterious earth? I looked all around me. I was paralyzed with terror, cold with fright, ready to shout out, ready to die. Suddenly, it seemed to me that the slab of marble on which I was sitting was moving, as if it were being raised. With a bound, I sprang onto the neighboring tomb, and I distinctly saw the stone which I had just quitted rise upright. Then, the dead person appeared, pushing the stone back with its bent back. I saw it quite clearly, although the night was so dark. On the cross, I could read, "Here lies Jacques Olivant, who died at the age of 51. He loved his family, was kind and honorable, and died in the grace of the Lord." The dead man also read what was inscribed on the tombstone. Then he picked up a stone off the path, a little pointed stone, and began to scrape the letters carefully. He slowly effaced them, and with the hollows of his eyes, he looked at the place where they had been engraved. Then, with the tip of the bone that had been his forefinger, he wrote in luminous letters, "Here reposes Jacques Olivant, who died at the age of 51. He hastened his father's death by his unkindness, as he wished to inherit his fortune. He tortured his wife, tormented his children, deceived his neighbors, robbed everyone he could, and died wretched." When he had finished writing, the dead man stood motionless, looking at his work. On turning around, I saw that all the graves were open, that all the dead had emerged, and that all had effaced the lines inscribed on their gravestones by their relations, substituting the truth instead. And I saw that all had been tormentors of their neighbors. Malicious, dishonest hypocrites, liars, rogues, that they had stolen, deceived, performed every disgraceful, every abominable action. These good fathers, these faithful wives, these devoted sons, these chaste daughters, these honest tradesmen, they were all writing at the same time on the threshold of their eternal abode the truth, the terrible and the holy truth, of which everybody was ignorant or pretended to be ignorant while they were alive. I thought that she also must have written something on her tombstone. And now, running without any fear, I went toward her, sure that I should find her immediately. I recognized her at once without seeing her face. And on the marble cross, where shortly before I had read, "She loved, was loved, and died," I now saw, having gone out in the rain one day, in order to deceive her lover, she caught cold and died. It appears they found me at daybreak, lying on the grave, unconscious.
That was James Reeser with "Was It a Dream?" by Guy de Maupassant. No serious or thorough discussion of the modern short story can take place without the mentioning of Guy de Maupassant. Any of those anthologies that dare to make the claim to contain, quote, the greatest short stories of all time, immediately surrender all credibility if it does not feature at least one of the more than 300 tales in this grand master's canon. Maupassant delighted in lacing his tales with clever plot twists and denouement galore, but there is also just as much feeling and astute observation about the human condition and the times he lived in. His short stories often reveled in the supernatural and the macabre. In addition to the tale you just heard, perhaps the greatest example of his work in this vein is the terrifying story of The Horla. There is some speculation that Maupassant penned this story of a malevolent, vampire-like presence as he was struggling with bouts of mental illness. It is said that it got to a point where he believed his story had crossed over from the world of fantasy to his own personal reality. Whatever the case may be, make it your business to get your hands on any of the many volumes of short stories by Guy de Maupassant still available in print. Just make sure that it includes The Horla. Fireside fun fact, many years ago, during our radio theater salad days, we performed our own adaptation of the story you just heard. It currently lies buried somewhere deep in our archives, but perhaps we'll have to dust it off someday and perform it anew. The Midnight Reading is produced by Gustavo Rodriguez and me for Fireside Mystery Productions. Our audio engineer is Wayne Silver, and our series was recorded at the Ice Plant Studio in New York City. I edited and supervised post-production. This summer's collection was curated and our series written by Sylvan Sandovar. Our theme music is by Martina Da Silva. Be sure not to miss any installment of The Midnight Reading by subscribing to the Fireside Mystery Theater podcast feed on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. A rating and review on iTunes would be most valued and appreciated. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, where our handle is @FiresideMystery. You can further support our passion for creating deliciously dark audio entertainment by becoming an FMT Patreon patron. Visit patreon.com/firesidemysterytheater for details. And for those of you in the New York City area, mark your calendars. Fireside Mystery Theater returns to the stage for a brand new season of thrilling and chilling original audio drama on Sunday, October 21st, 2018 at 5 p.m. We've got an exciting new season of The Strange and Mysterious lined up for you at the Slipper Room in New York City. Tickets are on sale at slipperroom.com. This is Ali Silva, strongly encouraging you to explore and discover the bewitching appeal of dark literature at your local bookstore or library. Thank you, kind listeners, for joining us. And until next time, be sure to mind the shadows.